oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show on CBS Audio Network. I am very pleased to speak to Ben and Ben Talablu, Senior Fellow of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, to understand the negotiation, informal, indirect, there are many euphemisms for this, between the Biden administration and the Tehran regime about the suspect nuclear weapons program and all the intricacies of enriched uranium. However, the story now moves to Beijing because in these last days, as Benham knows full well, there is new announcement that the PRC, the People's Republic of China, has made a long-term commitment to Iran. 25 years was the number I saw, and a large amount of money which can grow or not grow depending upon the years ahead. However, the deal looks to be about energy. The suggestion here, of course, is that China is part of the JCPOA, and therefore China entering into a deal with a country, with a nation, with a regime that is said to be in open violation of the Nuclear Proliferation Treaty seems puzzling. Benham, was this meant to be puzzling? Did China make this large announcement these last days in order to make the mosaic, as you correctly call it, even more difficult to solve from Washington's point of view?
Well, one thing really does beget another here. The Chinese, as you know, were part of that international negotiating team, that P5+1 coalition that got us the 2015 nuclear deal known as the JCPOA, which commenced its implementation in January 2016. Shortly after January 2016, there was talk of a China-Iran deal. And the building block of the China-Iran relationship, whether it was potentially talking about tightening military ties, post-embargo, or talking about this larger economic and infrastructure package, was the result of, now that the JCPOA has gutted most American sanctions, some of these countries which are more risk tolerant can begin to reinvest in Iran. And that was China's impetus for this deal. So you could really say this deal that is in the headlights now has been several years in the making, at least a half decade in the making. It was reported again as more details came into light late last year, and then now more recently with the trip of the Chinese foreign minister throughout the region. While the Iran component does matter, the Chinese, again, as we know, they're a hydrocarbon-dependent economy. They still have that economic performative legitimacy component at home, despite them being even more repressive and aggressive at home. So they are looking to continue to enmesh their footprint in the Persian Gulf region, period. This means being friendly with the Arab regimes on the other side of the Gulf, as well as keeping Iran in its corner. If you look at the economic data, both prior to and during the Obama-era sanctions, and both prior to and during the Trump-era sanctions, China has been the biggest licit and illicit importer of Iranian oil. And so they know the Iranians need them more than they need the Iranians. And so these types of agreements, these massive political agreements that talk about prospective economic agreements, contain things that the Chinese are interested in, such as infrastructure, looking ways to further enmesh the Iranians into the Belt and Road Initiative. And I wouldn't say this is a classic case of bad guy A and bad guy B getting together to create newfound threat C, but it is the makings of that story. It doesn't result in a significantly richer Iran tomorrow, and it doesn't result in a significantly more enmeshed China tomorrow. But it is worth zooming out here and looking at the China-Iran relationship and looking at how they've used their relationship to offset sanctions against one another, and also how China and other countries like Russia have been able to use Iran as a pawn in their strategic competition against the West, which is one reason why you have opposition and nationalist pushback and outlash in response to this China-Iran deal. I think the there's a famous motto. It's like you say, a revolutionary slogan of the Islamic Republic. It's called neither East nor West Islamic Republic. When talking about the regime, they said that it was neither East, you know, not communist like the Soviets or the Chinese, and not West, not the capitalist or liberal order. It was their own thing. But increasingly, as the Islamic Republic has come under pressure and as the regime has coarsened, and as reform has turned to revolution domestically for much of the population, the regime has looked East to offset West. So Iran apparently now feels more comfortable, at least the regime does, being a more junior partner to countries like Russia and China in many of these potentially lucrative economic relationships, just to continue its ideological conflicts with the West.
The picture I get is as the Chinese diplomats enter the front door, are the Russian diplomats shown the back door? Is this a replacement of Moscow's efforts to prop up the Iran regime these last years?
They need not be. You know, the Russians have a particular monopoly on certain Iranian nuclear activities. For instance, the light water reactor at Bushehr. The Russians are in charge of, you know, providing and taking away spent fuel, if memory serves me correctly. The Russians, again, are, you could say, involved militarily vis-a-vis the Iranians because of the sale of the advanced surface-to-air missile, the S-300 platform. There is the potential for the Chinese to move in and, like they did in the 1990s, sell a series of anti-ship cruise missiles that revolutionize Iran's anti-access air denial capabilities that make it harder for the U.S. to operate in the region. But I don't think they would replace. In fact, we may be going towards a place now, although the Iranian orientation towards the West is quite different, but in the 1800s, there was this policy of Movazaneh, balancing, where, you know, then the Qajar dynasty in Iran would balance different European countries off another, the British against the Russians against the British, the French against the Germans, and they were comfortable having their country be in a subordinate or subjugated position just to survive or just to gain a one-up on the other. So it is unclear if the Russians and Chinese will be subjected to this Iranian balancing strategy, but what is subjected to this strategy is, of course, Iran's embrace of the East to offset and fight the West.
I mentioned that the region is rife with troubles, and the one trouble that I want to know if this Iran-China deal or the Iran negotiation with the U.S. is going to answer. This headline, UN experts blame Yemen's Houthis for Aden airport attack. This came within these last days, but it underlines the fact that the surrogate civil war in Yemen continues to great tragedy. And Saudi Arabia and Tehran remain locked in a battle, an existential battle. Does the changing nature of the Iran deal affect in any fashion this surrogate civil war on the peninsula?
I think one thing is quite clear, that the Biden team wishes for this sort of delinkage of the nuclear and regional file, that it may be deprioritizing as we speak the regional issues. But as we all know, it takes two to tango. Just because the Houthis are delisted, which they were, as a foreign terrorist organization, doesn't mean that they will cease acting like a major terrorist group. They continue to retain political and military ties to the world's foremost state sponsor of terrorism, the Islamic Republic of Iran. Different terrorist groups have talked about supporting them, and those are Iran-backed groups in Iraq, for instance. The Houthis have talked about potentially fundraising for Lebanese Hezbollah, which is another terrorist organization. And perhaps worst of all, as it relates to the conflict in the Arabian Peninsula, the Houthis have used drones, cruise missiles, ballistic missiles against civilian and other population centers. They have basically plunged Yemen, which was already the Arab world's poorest country, further. It is their continuation of the conflict and is their cultivation of weaponry from the Iranians and their firing of it at significant rates, by the way, in 2021, if we're going to be honest, against Saudi civilian targets, hoping to besmirch the Saudis, besmirch their reputation, divorce Saudi Arabia from any kind of international partnerships or standing, and be able to more actively cement their hold. And they will owe that hold almost entirely to the Iranians. So divorcing the regional from the nuclear here, I think, would be a big mistake. And as the U.S. primary tool towards countering Iran is sanctions and remains sanctions, if we get to a world where the U.S. does a deal to relieve sanctions on a nuclear file and turns a blind eye towards these regional activities, it is necessarily handcuffed from employing its most powerful economic tools of statecraft, coercion, deterrence, and punishment against Iran's partners in the Arabian Peninsula, which are the Houthi rebels who continue their offensive in Marib, who continue to engage in gross human rights violations, whose continuation of the conflict could lead to cholera and famine again in Yemen. It is a strategic, moral, and political disaster on the doorstep of the Saudis and the flame that the Iranians are all too happy to fan.
Our final minute. Is there a timeline that makes sense for the informal, indirect diplomacy between Washington and Tehran? Does Tehran have all summer to wait out the offer? We have about 30 seconds.
It's clear that if Iran's illicit oil exports, and if it gets money for these illicit oil exports go up, that Iran has a greater incentive to say no. So the more illicit oil sales plus sanctions busting means Tehran can afford to say no longer. Coupled with the elections this June and the likely hardliner president who will come in, Iran will have a constellation of diplomacy skeptics in key positions of the government. So as the Biden team prepares to diminish tensions, you have the Iranians having more cash on hand and having more political will to escalate the conflict. So in short, no, there is no short-term timeline or short-term solution. In fact, the Iranians appear to be gearing up to continue this conflict.
Ben and Ben Talablu, Senior Fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, the Bazaar of Tehran, the Mosaic of Tehran. I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show on CBS Audio Network.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.